When you need legal expertise, you got a lot of options. Heck, just spend a few minutes watching local TV, you'll see plenty of legal help. Hey, Kevin Wall here. Look, no one ever wants to need an attorney. But when you do, it's important to hire one who knows the law. But more importantly, you need an attorney who shares your conservative values. That's why my small business, Battleborn Radio, trusts Craig Mueller to handle all our legal needs. Craig was born and raised here in Las Vegas, and he's our legal expert on Live and Local Now. Craig's been defending the Constitution for more than 3 decades, protecting your rights. And if you're hurt, in a car accident, or on the job, Craig Mueller will get you the money you deserve. I trust Craig Mueller with my small business. You can too. Call Craig at 702-887-1731. That's 702-887-1731. 887-1731. Or visit Craig online at CraigMuellerLawyer.com. That's CraigMuellerLawyer.com.
Washington, D.C. It got a lot of evil there, but we're getting it out step by step. A lot of evil. A lot of bad people. A lot of bad people. A lot of fake media. Look at them. A lot of fake media. Listen up. NBC is perhaps worse than CNN, I have to tell you. And MSNBC is horrible.
Check it out.
It's 1999. I'm on Meet the Press. A show now headed by Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd. He's a sleeping son of a bitch, I'll tell you.
That sounds awfully harsh. Why can't you be a little more supportive?
Number one! Time is running out! Number two!
Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
Fun lovers and truth seekers, you have come to the right place. It's Live and Local Now for a Monday, brand new week. We are counting down the days till May 15th, which may mark the reopening of the Nevada economy. We don't know that for a fact. We're still trying to digest what the governor told us last week, which is, well, maybe May 15th, maybe earlier, and that all 17 counties will go into phase one at once. Now, that strikes me as weird, because what happens if Esmeralda County is ready right now, today? Why should they be under quarantine or under stay-at-home orders when they're obviously ready to go? Maybe Clark County's not ready to go. We'll talk about that. In fact, tell you what, let's do is check in with Victor Jakes, the three-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He joins us. Victor, what did you make of the governor's comments last week at that news conference?
Well, it was kind of depressing, to be honest. I mean, we're sitting here, and it was our second news conference in 2 weeks where he said he would present his plan to reopen the state, and there wasn't a plan. I mean, there was like the vaguest outline of what the first step will look like. And then he says, well, there's going to be 4 stages or 3 stages, but I'm not really sure. And I don't know when casinos are going to, I'm not going to tell you when casinos are going to open, but I want you to know it's not going to be at the beginning of phase one, leaving everyone to think, wait, we thought they were going to be open in phase two or phase three, but now they could be open in phase one. The moment has clearly overwhelmed him. He's not able to make a decision, and Nevadans are hurting for it.
Who is actually going to be running the coming out party, so to speak? We just saw that Jim Murin's group is now going to dabble in how we reopen. Yet the governor announced LEAP, whatever the hell that is, last week. Explain what LEAP is, and how is that going to be different than the Jim Murin task force?
Well, I'll do my best. I will be honest with you. Everything I say is subject to change, because the governor seems to be reversing himself, you know, every 30 seconds. But what the goal of the LEAP was it was a local government advisory panel, basically providing recommendations on, you know, when the local governments were ready to go. And he did talk about, after phase one starts, you know, the different counties may be moving at different speeds. But then he kind of contradicted himself, because he said basically the counties can't do anything they can only do things more restrictive than the state. They can't do anything less restrictive. So I'm not really sure what that means. I mean, in theory, the idea is that you have different counties open at different speeds, which makes sense because Clark County is very different from Douglas County, very different from Elko County, very different from Ely County. But there's just a lot of confusion,
I know that there have been protests over the last 10 days here in Nevada, here in Las Vegas, up in Carson City, and elsewhere around the state. Who are these people that are protesting, and what is it they want?
Well, I mean, I think it's hard to paint anyone with a broad brush, but obviously, you know, these are folks who want to reopen Nevada, who say, you know, look, however long we thought we should be locked down, it's time to reopen up, not to go crazy, you know, not to jam 50,000 people into a stadium, but to say, you know, look, if there's a small business or a medium-sized business that can practice some social distancing measures, let them open up. I mean, we've got probably close to 30% unemployment right now and rising. That is a full-scale crisis that needs to be addressed. And needs to be mitigated as much as possible.
So what do you see happening on the 15th? Do you see all 17 counties being? I mean, I don't know why he did that. He said all 17 counties had got to be ready to go.
Yeah, it was interesting because he's been talking about this metric of, well, look, the hospitals can't be overcrowded. Which, agreed, that was the whole point of flattening the curve. They have plenty of capacity. They've had plenty of capacity for a month. Then he says we have to be trending downward in terms of the number of people testing positive. But he's not told us the metric that he's using for that. And we know it's not a day-to-day, but it's some sort of average. So is he averaging 5 days, 7 days, 14 days? And what he said is basically if we have 14 days of a decline in that average, that's when we'll open. And so he thinks that will be, you know, no later than May 15th, but that's why he says, well, maybe earlier than May 15th, because if we, you know, decline for 14 days, and he said we were last Thursday, he said we were on like day 5 or 6 of a decline. So in theory, we could be at day 10 of a decline, you know, so we could be moving into phase 1 as early as Friday. But we just don't know what the metric is, which makes it really hard to determine, you know, basically to keep track. Basically, we just wait, and then Sisolak announces, oh, we've met the metric that I never told you, never defined for you, but trust me, we met it.
I want to talk about public confidence. We've been told that if we go out in public, if we don't wear masks, if we congregate together, that we'll probably get the coronavirus and we'll probably die. Okay? So now we got to convince people, coast is clear, come on out, wear masks, don't congregate, but you probably will not die. It sounds like we got mixed messages going on here.
Well, it is mixed messages. I mean, I think the message that we were sent in March was, you know, look, this is going to sweep through the population, overwhelm the hospital system. And, you know, I think vast, vast majority of people said, okay, we will, you know, wreck the greatest economy in the history of the world, you know, put unemployment levels at a great recession or at, you know, great depression levels. But we're going to come out of this, right? I mean, that's the point is that, and that's the thing is that we've learned, you know, a month into the quarantine, we knew some things about the virus. We knew that it disproportionately affects those who are old or with pre-existing conditions. And not that no one under 65 has passed away from the disease, but it is a lot less deadly for those folks. And we also know that it's super contagious and we just aren't going to be able to stop the spread entirely. Well, when you've got those facts, then you got to start looking and saying, well, let's get everybody under 50 who's healthy back to work because that's how we balance the economy and public safety.
So what happens? We've got this big, beautiful, brand new stadium that's going up. And by the 31st of July, it should be open and finished. But will anybody be able to go there? What do you think, Victor?
I think they are. I think there is going to be football this year. You know, maybe it looks a little different. Maybe it looks a little different with, you know, they allow in 50% of people or something. But the thing is look, I mean, everyone's, not everyone, but the media's attention is certainly on the immediate part of the health crisis. But the economic crisis, the health impacts, the quality of life impacts that is going to have is going to far outweigh or at least be comparable to the amount of death and destruction we've seen from coronavirus. And I think at some point people are going to say, look, we've got to start living again. We've got to be able to go out and do the things that make our economy grow and thrive, especially if we're not doing anything but delaying the virus basically just working its way through the population. And let's do everything we can to protect the elderly, to protect those with pre-existing conditions. But if the virus hits those people so much, the best thing we could do is basically get herd immunity among the young, healthy people who the virus isn't going to kill.
More coming up. Victor Jenks joining us, three-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We're going to take a look at kind of the risk-benefit to reopening our Nevada economy. There are folks that are claiming that we may end up causing 233,000 extra deaths by June 30th, but we could save up to 18 million jobs. Is that worth doing? We'll talk about that and more coming up. Live and local now. In these troubled times, we all need to prepare for the unexpected. Hey, Kevin Wall here. That's why I recently called Castle Insurance Group to do a full review of my insurance. In an emergency, I wanted to be fully covered, but I also wanted to make sure I was getting the most bang for the buck. Hello. I spent all of about 10 minutes with my Castle Insurance Group agent, and the next morning, she had my quotes for auto and renter's insurance ready to go. She not only improved my coverage, but she also saved me hundreds of dollars. In these uncertain times, who couldn't use more money in their pocket? At Castle Insurance Group, they'll find you the best policy from name brand insurers like Progressive, Nationwide, Safeco, Travelers, Hartford, and ASI. Would you like to save money on your home, auto, and life insurance while actually improving coverage? Then call my friends at Castle Insurance Group at 702-714-1060. Ask for a free quote. That's 702-714-1060. All it will cost you is 10 minutes and a phone call. That's 702-714-1060.
Hi, I'm State Senator Scott Hammond. These are difficult times for all of us, a time set apart. But our Las Vegas community has always come together when we need to. We all have a part to play, and it is heartwarming to know that our community is strong enough to fight this. Many of you also have questions or concerns, which is why I have compiled as much information and resources on my website as possible. Please visit HammondForNevada.com/COVID-19. That's HammondForNevada.com/COVID-19. Paid for by Friends of Scott Hammond.
Hello, this is Jared Fisher. I'm a business owner, community thought leader, and a previous candidate for governor of Nevada. As the owner of Las Vegas Cycery and Escape Adventures, I know the importance of exercise and spending time in the outdoors. During the COVID-19 business shutdown, the Department of Homeland Security has categorized bicycle shops as essential businesses. We've been servicing a lot of bikes to help people get their two-wheeled transportation up and running. Many people who are losing their jobs are now using their bicycles for transportation. They don't have money for their car or their insurance, so they'll use a bike to get around. Our community is also using them as a way to get outdoors, stay in shape, and enjoy the fresh air. If you need help dusting off the cobwebs and getting on your bike, we're here to service you curbside from 9 to 5 daily. We're located at 10575 Discovery Drive at the exit ramp of Town Center and 215, as well as the Bonneville Transit Center downtown Las Vegas. Our phone number is 702-596-2953.
Hey, Kevin Wall here. Are you in need of a healthcare program? Well, you're in luck. As a member of Liberty HealthShare, you're part of a community that comes together to share their medical expenses. You can sign up throughout the year with memberships starting as early as the following month. And there are no contracts or commitments. Programs start as low as $199 per month, and there's no network. So you can choose your own doctors and hospitals. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit ministry, not insurance. So your money goes towards helping other members with their eligible medical expenses. And in your time of need, other members are there for you. You can feel good knowing that you're part of a community of like-minded individuals who understand the importance of people coming together to bear one another's burdens. To find out more, call 855-58-LIBERTY. That's 855-58-LIBERTY. or go to libertyhealthshare.org/Kevin Wall. That's libertyhealthshare.org/Kevin Wall.
Hi, I'm Jim Small, and I'm running for State Assembly in District 2. I grew up instilled with the values of hard work, giving back to the community, and spending money wisely. District 2 wants a representative in Carson City that will fight high taxes and regulations that hurt businesses and the livelihood of everyday Nevadans. I have carried those values all of my life, and I have the necessary experience to do the job. My name is Jim Small, and I'm running to be your assemblyman in District 2. Remember, think big, vote small. Paid for by Jim for Nevada.
790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
Across the state of Nevada and in SoCal, too, it's live and local now. Victor Jakes, three-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, joining us. Victor, there was a study released last week, in fact, last Friday, from Pennsylvania's Penn-Wharton budget model. The new report estimates that fully reopening the economy would lead to an additional 233,000 deaths nationally by the end of June relative to not reopening, but would at the same time save 18.6 million jobs from being lost. Is it time to have a national discussion on the risk-reward aspect of this, that people will die, but we'll save more jobs? Is that a deal worth doing?
Well, it's the conversation that we need to have. And the reason is, you know, if you look and just say, well, we have to, you know, save every life possible, That's not how you do public policy. That's like saying, well, a child died walking to school, therefore we have to shut the school system down because that will save one life. That's not how it works. And the point of, I mean, if you remember the flatten the curve diagram, right, that was everywhere and showed why we had to shut the economy down, it was not about decreasing the number of people infected with coronavirus. And I think that's the false impression that people who are pushing to keep the economy locked up are that's what they're trying to present, is that, look, somehow we can get rid of the coronavirus. Look, Las Vegas gets 40 million tourists a year coming here. Guess what? 40 million people a year are not all coming from places that don't have the coronavirus. So we have to acknowledge that the coronavirus is here, that it's going to spread, and then we have to say, well, how can we protect the most vulnerable? Because we can do something where we get 95% of the benefit, the health benefits, and 95% of the economic benefits. And that is, you've got to protect the elderly. You've got to clamp down on the nursing homes, do as much testing there as possible, do everything you can to protect those folks. And look, if you are elderly or have a pre-existing condition, you've got to gauge how you can protect yourself. But for other people, when you look at the stats in New York, the people who've died, I mean, it's in the low double digits, the people who are 44 and under without a pre-existing health condition who have died. And there have been 12,000 people who've died in New York City overall. And so we've got to be aware that just like when the flu comes, you know, they say the flu kills 40 to 50,000 people a year. And again, there's lots of differences between these two. But the point is, look, you have to balance lots of different things, and you can't just focus on one thing, even when that one thing is as important as public health.
I'm not sure how much you follow the numbers, the deaths, the hospitalizations, the ventilators, et cetera. But I'm curious what you think about the numbers here in Nevada. Are they coming down? Is it flattening out? Are we headed towards 14 straight days of positive numbers?
Well, it just depends on what the average that Sysolac is using. I haven't actually run the numbers for over the weekend, but there was a bad day either Saturday or Sunday, and so I'm interested to see what that's going to do to the average. And again, it's just my best guess at the average because Sysolac's not telling, you know, what average he's using. But we have been on a decline since the 24th of April is when Sysolac said, you know, the state's been declining from, so that's two Fridays ago. There is a decline, but it's very flat. I mean, we've been around 13.5% to 12.5% positive tests on a weighted rolling average scale.
And I want to ask you about Governor Sisolak in our final couple of minutes. Governor Sisolak has been criticized. A lot of the protests have directed their wrath at the governor. This is something none of us encountered. I mean, we had no idea that this was going to happen. And this kind of just fell into his lap. What do you think in general about the job Governor Sisolak has done?
You know, at the beginning, I think it was pretty positive. Look, I mean, he reacted early, and, you know, you can say, you know, I think we're going to look back and say that the lockdowns were an overreaction. But it was, even if we do, it was an understandable move at the time. We didn't know that we were concerned about the hospital capacity. And so he said, look, we're going to shut it down. I get that. And I supported that. I thought that was reasonable. Again, even if it comes out that it was an overreaction based on what we end up knowing, I think it was a reasonable measure. But for the last, like, 3 weeks, I mean, it's been no communication, promises of plans, and then basically just, you know, oh, we've got phases and stages, and we'll let you know. And then the worst thing is he's pushing this idea, basically, that we just have to save all the lives. You know, I'm not going to make people choose between their paycheck and their life. That's not how you do public policy. You cannot do public policy by just focusing on one variable. And I think what's happening, he's even talked about this in his last press conference, is, look, things are changing so fast that he's kind of been paralyzed by how new it is, right? He doesn't have a guide to go off of. And so, you know, even if it's understandable that he's paralyzed, because it is, it's very new, I'm sure he feels a lot of responsibility. You know, for the people, obviously, who have died from this, the jobs that have been lost, you've got to make a path forward. You've got to say, look, this is the path forward. This is why we're doing it. You know, these are the trade-offs. And I understand there's going to be trade-offs. There have got to be trade-offs, because that's just how life works. There are always trade-offs. By getting out of your house and going in your car, you are making a trade-off. You're increasing your risk of dying. But that's something we do because we mitigate risk. And so I think that's where Sisolak needs to move into, is how do we mitigate the risk, and how do we, you know, focus now back on getting some of the economy going again, because that's what we've got to have.
Victor, always good visiting with you. Be safe, you and your family, and we'll talk with you again next Monday.
All right, appreciate it, Kevin. Thanks, man.
That's Victor Jakes, 3-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Coming up, State Senator Scott Hammond. Are we ready to reopen the economy of the state of Nevada? The governor says we might do it May 15th. We might do it earlier. Or we might not do it at all. I'm more confused now than probably ever. We'll talk about that and more coming up. Also, Jared Fisher. He could have been the governor handling this crisis. He ran for governor. He rode his bicycle across all 17 counties. We'll talk with him and see what he thinks. He's also a small business guy, and I want to get his small business perspective on PPP, you know, the government loan program, but also this whole idea of how small businesses get back to business. We'll do that and more coming up. He'll join us about 11 o'clock. Also, Congressman Mark Amadei, what does he think? He's stuck back in Carson City. He's not in D.C. legislating. And I get a sense he wants to get back to it. We'll talk about that and more coming up live and local now.
I'm Lauren Simonetti, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks are falling in afternoon trading as tensions escalate over blame for the possible origin of the coronavirus pandemic. And airline stocks are getting hammered today after Warren Buffett said over the weekend that he has sold all of his holdings in the U.S. airline industry. Shares of General Electric are falling after the industrial conglomerate announced more layoffs at its aviation division, its largest and most profitable unit. GE will reduce aerospace jobs by 25%. Back in March, the company announced announced reductions of 10%. Today's new figures also include those cuts. And the parent company of Gold's Gym, GGI Holdings, filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection as the pandemic wreaks havoc on the company's business. The mostly franchised gym said the bankruptcy will have no further impact on current operations. The brand has nearly 700 fitness centers. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm Chris Foster. The coronavirus outbreak has the Supreme Court for the first time hearing oral arguments broadcast live and over the telephone.
Oh, yay. Oh, yay. Oh, yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to give their attention, for the court is now sitting.
The first case is about whether the travel website Booking.com can trademark its name. Some more countries, including Italy, are lifting some coronavirus restrictions.
A reunion in Rome. Grandparents Domenico and Maria Antonia embracing their five-year-old granddaughter as Europe's longest coronavirus lockdown is relaxed. Italy now allowing limited family meetups.
Fox's Simon Owen. Don Shula died, 90 years old. He coached 33 seasons in the NFL, winning more games than anyone. America's listening to Fox News.
Fox Nation presents A Grateful Nation. Now, more than ever, it's time for us to say thank you to America's military heroes, past and present. All month long, hear stories of courage, honor, and sacrifice from the men and women who fought on the front lines and continue to keep our country safe. Fox Nation presents A Grateful Nation. Now, for a limited time, receive a free signed copy of Pete Hegseth's new book with the purchase of a one-year subscription to Fox Nation.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, Getting Schooled with Abby Hornacek.
What happens when oil prices drop into the negatives? Here to talk me through all of this is Fox Business Network financial correspondent Jackie DeAngelis.
If you're an oil producer, you would have to pay someone to take a barrel of oil off your hands. And the reason that that happened is because demand collapsed.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Class dismissed.
Hiring people is probably the worst part of my job. It's such a hassle, the searching, the sorting through resumes. Most people don't have the right experience.
We started using ZipRecruiter about 3 months ago. Right from the start, you could tell it was going to make hiring a lot easier. One click and my job was posted to 100+ job boards, all the top sites.
All of the candidates came to my dashboard, and it's easy to compare them. Thumbs up if I liked them. Thumbs down if I didn't. No emails and attachments, printing up docs, phone calls, none of that.
And I couldn't believe the number of great applicants we got. I had the person we needed within 1 week. I don't know how we hired before ZipRecruiter.
Whether you're looking to fill one position or 20, find the best candidates with ZipRecruiter, where your job is just one click away from 100+ job sites. ZipRecruiter, the fastest way to hire. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/radio offer. That's ZipRecruiter.com/radio offer. ZipRecruiter.com/radio offer.
You don't have to deliver 15 tons of food to the hungry.
You can start with 10 ounces.
You don't have to dedicate your life to saving lives.
You just dedicate 15 minutes.
You don't need to provide guidance to 5,000 young men and women.
Just one will do.
You don't have to build a school in an impoverished area to change a child's life.
Just spend an hour a week reading at one.
The men and women of America's Navy do some amazing things to make the world a better place. But then again, so can millions of everyday Americans right in their own backyards. Brought to you by America's Navy.
790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
We'll be right back.
We are your radio program of record. We are live and local now. And joining us now, Scott Hammond, state senator. He has been on this program countless times. And at least since the coronavirus pandemic reared its ugly head, we have talked with him a lot. And Scott, first of all, thanks so much for joining us. You and I have talked a lot about your frustration, the communication with the governor being lackluster at best, non-existent, to be really quite honest. During his news conference last week, he said, well, I can't be talking with 17 county commissioners and 63 members of the legislature. I simply can't do it. Has the communication, could it be better? He said, yeah. Your thoughts on that? And by the way, have you had any direct communications with the governor himself?
No, I still haven't had any direct conversations. And well, first of all, I should say thanks a lot for having me on the program again, Kevin. And it's a great, beautiful day out there in Las Vegas, a little cooler than last week, which is kind of nice. But going back to that question, no, I haven't had any direct conversations with the governor, nor has many of my colleagues on either side of the aisle, I believe. Now, I could be wrong because I don't talk to everybody, but, you know, my frustration is this. At this time, you have to have somebody who's a leader who's going to be out there and communicates with the people, who's going to sit there and calm them down when they need to be calmed. Talk straight when they need to be talked straight to. I mean, he's quick when he wants to scold or lecture people. I get that. I mean, sometimes, you know, you get frustrated and you get that. But you've got to give people hope. Sometimes I get on the phone conversation, and if it's unemployment insurance, I don't necessarily have all the answers, and I can't necessarily get something done right now for somebody. But in many cases, that person is just going to say, it is just wonderful to be able to talk to somebody. It's reassuring, and I've actually had people say it's just kind of calming to be able to reach out and then when I call, be able to talk to somebody over the phone about what's going on, about my particular case, about anything in general. I've had several conversations. That's what people are looking for. They need somebody who's going to calm everybody down, have that communication, and let's be honest, when he does communicate, he has to go back out and re-communicate with people, re-explain what he meant the first time, and it's been really difficult to kind of go through that crisis mode with him because he has not had that ability to do that and communicate. And, I was not happy with what his comment was. I know that the President of the United States gets together with all 50 of the governors, kind of goes through their list. What have you been doing for, what do you guys need in your state? What are you guys hearing? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I would like to have had from him at least once every week or maybe once every 2 weeks. That would be fine. He doesn't have to communicate with us every day. I thought that was a quick little jab at us where he says, I can't talk to you guys every day. And nobody asked him for that. But it would be nice because we are the closest to our constituents, right? We were voted into office to help our constituents. We need to know what else is going on so we can communicate with them. But it would have been nice to have a conversation where he said, hey, Senator, what's going on in your district? What are you hearing? What do we need to be doing there? What can we do for some of your constituents? What can we help you with? That would have been really nice to be able to go through that at least once a week. I would even take once every 2 weeks, but so far nothing. And I think that's the biggest failure right now of this whole crisis was that absence of real communication.
Hey, Scott, what is your sense after listening to the governor last week at his news conference? I came away from that more confused than ever. What is your sense of when we will finally be able to reopen this thing, where we can get a hair, nails, massage, churches in person? Do you get a sense of when any of that's going to be happening?
No, about the only sense I get right now is that the LEAP committee, which the governor talked about on this press conference, I believe it's made up right now of about four people, a county commissioner from Washoe, I think his name is Bob Lucy, J.J. Goycochea from Eureka, Marilyn Kirkpatrick here, the chair of our county commission, and then I think Dagny, who's she represents the NACO, which is the county associations across the state of Nevada. So those four folks are working on getting the data and then putting the application together and then sending it off to, whoever. Well, it actually has to be reviewed by the governor, and then that it will be in turn sent to the president's team to see if we're ready for phase one opening. As far as all those other businesses, that comes in time, with the different phases. But I would like to see us open up this week, and I think that's what the goal is to open us up this week. at least in phase one. So that may not necessarily mean we get to all go to a movie at a movie theater, but that might mean that we can go get a haircut. It might mean that we can go to a restaurant with certain limitations where they have to make sure that they have spacing still or social distancing. It might mean that, you know, they have to make sure that they're wiping down a little more often, that kind of stuff. So there's going to be, you know, procedures in place. But a lot of people have been putting a lot of work in over the weekend to try and make that happen. I mean, even sometimes it's not going to happen right overnight. We all know that. We keep hearing that. You can't just flip on a switch. The governor made the announcement even before his press conference. I think it was 2 or 3 days before his press conference. He said that dental offices and elective surgeries could start again. Well, that was probably a week ago, maybe 6 days ago, that he made mention of that. And I don't think the dental practices are actually open until today. I think today is the official opening tomorrow. So it takes time. So even after he made that announcement, you still have to have people put procedures and protocols in place to try and mitigate from the spread of the virus, because the virus is still out there. It's still there. We just got to mitigate it.
So, Senator, how do we recover from a public confidence standpoint? How do we get people confident that they can go to a, as you say, a movie theater, and they're not going to get the coronavirus?
Well, I think there's a couple of confidence factors myself. I mean, we're already seeing in the news that because of the mitigating factors that we all committed to, that we did a huge service to each and every one of us, each other, by flattening the curve. We did a great job on that, so we mitigated tremendously. And like I said, though, it's still out there. It's still going to spread, no matter how serious we are, how committed we are to these procedures. It's still going to get spread. But the idea was to mitigate it to the point where we're not inundating our healthcare service all at one time, that we didn't all go there. I think you instill confidence in people when they see that a lot of procedures are being put into place, that people are taking it seriously when they go out, that when you go to a restaurant. I mean, I always felt pretty confident when I was going to the Smith's grocery store, the Albertson's grocery store, and there the person was spraying off the machines every time you touched it. You know, there's that level of, okay, well, at least they're trying to mitigate even more. So I think that for us, our casinos may not be open right away, but when they do open up, they have to demonstrate that they're taking this very seriously, so that it drives up the confidence level, because we got to get people back in here from out of town. We got to get them out, you know, around town. Our neighboring states have got to be coming in here, and then eventually our national, international travel has got to get in here as well. But I think you show that by making sure that people see that you as a business are committed to keeping their safety in mind. I don't think it has to be forced by the government. I think that a lot of these businesses, if they want people to come in, they're going to have to show that they are serious about social distancing and about keeping people as safe as possible. And then I think eventually we'll start to feel a little bit more confident. We'll see the number of cases. It was really, for me, it was great to hear about, I think, the readjustment of the numbers, the COVID deaths as they are going through and trying to figure out what was really related to COVID and what was not. And we're starting to see that those numbers are much lower than we thought. And as we get more testing out there, as we find out that more people are being tested and find out that we probably have more people out there that had the virus, but then, you know, the only manifestation of it was a cold or symptoms that were, well, in some cases, asymptomatic. I think that we're going to see the morbidity and mortality rate go down, and I think that'll give us a lot more confidence as well. But for those of you who are still in those categories that are high risk, you have to, you know, take into consideration your own safety and make those, take those precautionary steps and continue to stay away from folks, or stay away from certain groups of people, I think.
Again, State Senator Scott Hammond joining us. Have you in the last week, the last 10 days, seen any improvement in Dieter? They have a new interim director, but a lot of people are still saying, I still can't get through. I can't get my thing processed. Are you seeing any progress at all at the Dieter office?
Yeah. Hey, Kevin, it starts at 7:30 in the morning when I get my first phone call, and I don't mind. I know people have called me, and I don't want you to feel bad. I get it at 7:30 in the morning, and it doesn't stop. I probably get one or two an hour talking about their unemployment insurance. And in some cases, it's a person calling back saying, hey, you were right. They did get to me right away. You know, they got back to me And so people are reporting back to me their experience that they started getting their payments on their cards. They start talking about just little things so that I'm getting, you know, the communication I'm getting are from people with success stories and people who are still frustrated. They, like I said, last week, the Dieter office identified about 80,000 applicants who, for whatever reason, the system had put into a different batches. Maybe somebody put the wrong former employee. Maybe somebody started to file for unemployment a couple days too early. They were still furloughed and still got a paycheck. And so for whatever reason, they went into these different categories. In some cases, somebody who's a independent gig worker, you know, an independent contractor, they thought that they should go through the regular system. Probably somebody told them to, and so they did. That's sitting in a different batch. Anyway, they've identified about 80,000 of those, and they did get through, I would believe, most of those already, because I keep getting people calling me up saying, you were right, they got to me. And so things are a little smoother there. It's still going to take time. The thing that I'm worried about is the independent contractors, the ones that are getting that $600 payment from the federal government. They're waiting for their system to get up and running. And here in the state of Nevada, our system is not there yet. They're hoping that that's the middle of May. There are people out there who were probably thinking it was going to be a little sooner because they heard about other states opening up that system. The problem we have here, the thing that's kind of slowing us down, is that we're trying to get that system. But we hired a company. The company has worked for the state a couple different times. They have all the guidelines from the federal government. They know what information needs to go in there, and now it's a matter of putting that information in there. And in some states where you have, for example, a state income tax, it was easy. You know, they put all that information in there, and it's verifiable. You don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. We don't have that here. So it's sort of a good, a bad thing, good thing, right? The bad thing is it's going to take a little bit longer. The good thing is we still don't have a state income tax. So it's going to take a little bit longer. They're looking at middle of May, maybe, you know, 3 weeks from now, and then people who are independent gig workers, you'll have a separate system. You'll apply on that separate system, and then start drawing those payments every week.
Let me ask you
and
a couple.
It'll be retroactive.
And again, the retroactive is good unless you're facing, foreclosure or you got a rent payment to make or a car payment to make, and you don't have the money. The fact that this stuff's all going to be backdated, and the governor's repeatedly said that, doesn't wash with me because it doesn't help the guy that needs to, you know, stay in his rental apartment, but he doesn't have the money for the payment.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, one of the questions I got, I was on my way to work this morning. I came into the office for the first time in a while. And the first thing the guy said was, I haven't had nothing. You know, I'm sitting around and I've got to get my payment for here. Why didn't anybody anticipate this before we went into this? And I don't know what the answer is to that. I don't know why they didn't, you know, we're behind here, but that's, you know, we're living in the reality of where it is. Now, I've had somebody say that they did start getting their checks last week. What they're doing is they're giving you the first payment, they put it on that card, and then if they might send out two or three more batches that week. So you might actually get two or three more payments in 1 week. So it's not just about retroactive, it's also about trying to catch you back up to where you are, where we are right now. So you might get three payments on your card in 1 week, two the next week, one the next week, and so forth. So they're trying to do their best there. I'm not trying to dissuade anybody from having a little bit of anger. I mean, I'm not assuaging you from feeling the way you are. I'm just trying to give you the facts about where we are and give you a little bit of hope that, you know, things will work out. But you're definitely right. There are people who are starting to get very, very anxious. You know, that single mother with two kids who's been relying on her paycheck for, you know, years, and now all of a sudden doesn't have that ability to pay not only rent but also getting food. It's getting serious out there, you know. And so if you hear about if somebody that needs help, let me know. Let any of us know because we're here to help out. I think that we'd be more than happy to reach out to some of these folks who are these nonprofit arenas that, you know, that just we just have to give them direction on who to go and who to serve, and they'll be there for them. That's what people do, and I love that about our community and about the United States. I mean, we've always been a caring country and about making sure people are taken care of. So if you hear anything, Kevin, please let me know, and we'll do our best to find a solution for that person.
Another political question. You're on the ballot for re-election this year. How is campaigning different now that it's, you can't exactly walk neighborhoods and knock on doors?
No, you can't. And that's mostly what people would be doing right now, and myself included, knocking on doors, kind of finding, getting a feeling for where people are. No, you can't do that right now. Most people would not open their door for you, and rightfully so. No, right now, I think it's there's a lot of people doing Zoom campaigning, meet the candidates on Zoom meetings or meet the candidate in some sort of online forum. Myself, I do those teletown hall meetings every week. It's not really campaigning, but it is a way to get to the voters and get to the constituents of my district, because I like to be able to talk to them anyway. And so those have been very successful, because you kind of miss that interaction with folks, kind of getting an idea of where they are. And I get a lot of that. I've done several teletown hall for myself. I did one with Melissa Hardy, Assemblywoman Hardy, last week. I'll be doing another one for the GOP tomorrow. They're doing a teletown hall tomorrow night. And so it's just a kind of way to reach out and talk to a lot of folks. But that's the way to campaign right now, is either through social media or online in an interactive way.
Final 90 seconds. You've gotten a lot of attention during this crisis as perhaps the most outspoken and present elected Republican. Your teletown halls, your website. Any thoughts about future office? I mean, a lot of people I've heard say, when is Scott Hammond going to like go for higher office? Any thoughts on that?
No, I don't have any thoughts on that, because, you know, I'm running for state senate right now. And like a lot of people always like to say, you kind of focus on what you're doing right now. And I enjoy what I'm doing right now. And if I ever do anything else, it's only after I talk to my family about it and made a commitment to something else. But I'm not going to worry about that right now. Like I said, I was out and about the other day. Somebody actually recognized me, which doesn't happen very often. And that was great, because she said, I just listened to your stuff on the teletown hall. I love the advice that you're giving. And that, to me, is everything I need to hear right now. And so that's all I'm concentrating on right now. But thanks for the question, Kevin.
Laser
and
focus.
Thanks for having me on the program.
Hey, so your next teletown hall is?
Tonight, 7 o'clock. We'll have all the information on my website, HammondForNevada.com. And then you can also check it out on Twitter, which is at HammondForNevada, the number 4 in that case. The other one was F-O-R, but this one is the number 4.
I'll tell you what, you stay safe, my friend. Keep answering all the questions. The voters love that. Thank you so much, my friend. We'll talk soon.
All right, we'll talk to you. Bye.
That's Scott Hammond, state senator from Las Vegas. Stick around. More to do as we continue. It is live and local now.
There is good news. We will recover. We will thrive if we act now. I'm Sam Peters, and I'm running to be your congressman in Nevada's District 4. I'm not a professional politician. I'm a 20-year military veteran and a successful business owner. I know how to balance a budget, secure a border, and help President Trump revive our economy. Nevada, we need a congressman who will work for you. I can help. Join SamPetersForCongress.com. Remember, Sam Peters, the number 4, Congress.com. I approve this message.
Paid for by the committee to elect Sam Peters.
Do you or a member of your family suffer from chronic pain? Would you like to make the pain go away? Hey, Kevin Wall here. Then you need to check out the Pain Injury Brain Center of America, now open in Las Vegas. At PIPCOA, they treat your chronic pain without addictive drugs and with non-invasive pain-free therapy. I suffered from chronic pain due to an impingement of my rotator cuff. I tried cortisone shots, painful physical therapy, nothing worked. Then a friend suggested I contact PIPCOA, and after just 6-hour-long treatments, the pain went away. In fact, I canceled my scheduled surgery. And after a brief hiatus due to the coronavirus, PIPCOA is back accepting appointments. Whether your pain comes from headaches, a disc injury, broken bones, hip or knee injury, neuropathy, even PTSD, regardless of the source of your pain, PIPCOA can make the pain go away. You don't have to live with the chronic pain. Make the pain go away. Call PIPCOA at 702-546-8767. That number again, 702-546-8767.
Hello, I'm Steven Silvercross, candidate for University Regent in District 3. As a state assemblyman, I fought and passed major education reforms. As a regent, I'll continue the fight to modernize and improve our state's universities and colleges. Silvercross might be hard to spell, but it's nothing compared to how hard I'll work for you. For more information, check out my website at silvercross.com. That's silvercross.com. S-I-L-B-E-R-K-R-A-U-S.com. paid for by Friends for Steven Silvercross.
Hey, Kevin Wall here. A few months ago, a friend invited me for a Tuesday evening of fun at Ichabod's Lounge. Ichabod's isn't in my neighborhood, and yeah, I had to drive an extra 10 minutes, but boy, am I glad I did. What I didn't know at the time was that Ichabod's has been there for 31 years and family-owned for 19 years. It's one of the top gaming bars in Las Vegas with the best promotions and amazing monthly cash giveaways and payouts. As they say at Ichabod's, we manage with generosity. Ichabod's features incredible menu items, including steaks, seafood, burgers, pasta, and five daily specials. And their kitchen's open 24 hours for you late-night foodies. And I just love Ichabod's old-school Vegas atmosphere. When everybody else is cutting back, Ichabod's continues to super serve its customers. Check out their nightly entertainment at the Piano Bar from 6:30 to 10:30. You want to win? You want to have fun? Then I'll see you at Ichabod's Vintage Vegas Dining, Gaming Lounge, and Piano Bar on East Flamingo at Pecos.
As a woman and a mom, sometimes you just have to take a stand. Take Dan Rodimer, who's running for Congress. You kidding me? Rodimer's violent criminal record is an immediate disqualifier. Rodimer has been arrested for violent assaults 3 times. In one case, Rodimer admitted guilt to battery. Another Rodimer attack was so horrific, his victim had intracranial bleeding. A witness at one attack told police Rodimer bragged he liked to hurt people. And an arrest warrant described Rodimer as armed or dangerous. But there's more. A police report detailed Rodimer's harassment of a teenage girl, while another exposed Rodimer was investigated for a domestic incident. It's bad enough Rodimer was sued for forgery, fraud, and for not paying his taxes. But violent assaults and harassing women? That's unforgivable. Paid for and authorized by Friends of Dan Schwartz.
I'm Dan Schwartz, candidate for Congress, and I approve this message.
790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
Hey, I've got a question for you. Do you or a member of your family suffer from chronic pain? Would you like to make the pain go away? Then you need to check out my friends at the Pain Injury Brain Center of America, PIBCOA, now open in Las Vegas. At PIBCOA, they treat your chronic pain without addictive drugs and with non-invasive, pain-free therapy. How do I know? Well, I suffered from my own chronic pain for a long time, for months on end, due to an impingement of my rotator cuff. I tried cortisone shots, painful physical therapy, nothing worked. Then a friend suggested I try PIBCOA, and after just 6-hour-long treatments, the pain went away. And in fact, I canceled my surgery. And after a brief hiatus due to the coronavirus, PIBCOA's back at it. So whether your pain comes from headaches, a disc injury, broken bones, hip or knee injury, neuropathy, even PTSD, regardless of the source of your pain, PIBCOA can make the pain go away. Now, you don't have to live with that pain anymore. Call PIBCOA right now. Summer is waiting to take your call. She's wonderful. She has all the answers. Call her right now, in fact, 702-546-8767. The number again, 702-546-8767. That's PIBCOA, the Pain Injury Brain Center of America. Coming up, Jared Fisher, he ran for governor. He might have been the guy dealing with the coronavirus, had he won his primary. Unbelievable. We'll talk with a small businessman, former candidate for governor, and big believer in bicycles, Jared Fisher. That's all coming up, live and local now.
Hi, I'm Jim Small, and I'm running for State Assembly in District 2. I grew up instilled with the values of hard work, giving back to the community, and spending money wisely. District 2 wants a representative in Carson City that will fight high taxes and regulations that hurt businesses and the livelihood of everyday Nevadans. I have carried those values all of my life, and I have the necessary experience to do the job. My name is Jim Small, and I'm running to be your Assemblyman in District 2. Remember, think big, vote small. Paid for by Jim for Nevada.
Hi, I'm State Senator Scott Hammond, These are difficult times for all of us, a time set apart. But our Las Vegas community has always come together when we need to. We all have a part to play, and it is heartwarming to know that our community is strong enough to fight this. Many of you also have questions or concerns, which is why I have compiled as much information and resources on my website as possible. Please visit HammondForNevada.com/COVID-19. That's HammondForNevada.com/COVID-19. Paid for by Friends of Scott Hammond.
790 KVET, Winchester, Las Vegas.
Talk now.